oftentimes it's better to start with creativity to help you learn the facts.
Life is too short to learn a list of 1,000 rando words.
From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In with your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, and I'm with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who's dean of the Graduate School of Education. And I should say, we're not actually with one another. We are talking via Zoom today. He's at his house, I'm at my house. We are socially distancing because of COVID-19.
Dr. Denise, will this make a difference, Pope? So the reason I say that is I think there's a lot of innovation going on right now. Some in response to just how can we stay afloat, and some fundamentally new ways of doing things. And so the question is, will any of this last? Or is it just something that'll be here and then we'll go back to normal, whatever normal is? So I want to start with you. I get really excited when I hear about new innovations in teaching that are a result of this. For example, I have a graduate student who teaches an intro course. She's a TA, and it's on Zoom. It's for undergrads, and there's a lot of undergrads, and they break out into participant rooms. And so when they do that, she has no idea what's going on. And so, right, well, this is the big challenge of the online, is a very thin feedback as an instructor. So she doesn't really know what's going on. And so one option is she just sort of plops in to one of the rooms and says, "What are you guys doing?" And that's really disruptive. It's not like sort of walking around the class and seeing, should I intervene or not? So she came up with a solution where she gives them tasks, and they're all doing them on like Google Sheets. So each group has to be producing on Google Sheets. And then in a separate window, she can see all the student sheets simultaneously. So she can see who's making progress and who's getting stuck. And she uses that to decide whom to talk to. I thought that was really a clever innovation, a small scale innovation, but very clever.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. We're seeing lots of sort of small scale, clever innovations happening. I mean, we've spent a lot of time at Challenge Success thinking about how you can build connections with kids virtually. And we now have a list of, 50 different ways to build connections virtually with kids that are really doable that we pass on to schools, because I think there's this panic of how do we build connections through a screen, and what happens if they don't show up, and what parts of the classroom can we replicate and what parts can we not? And I'll tell you one that's kind of exciting to me. We heard a little bit about this on another show that we did, which is I think people are relying less on traditional tests. I don't have good data yet, right? But from what I'm hearing, people realize that giving a traditional test where someone could easily just, quickly get on Google and cheat, right? Because you can't really see who's being honest and who isn't being honest on the test. They're really trying to rely on alternate forms of assessment. And that, makes me very happy.
Hard to do. Here's another innovation that I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah.
So we have a teacher education program. It's quite good. It's very high touch. And so need to think a lot about how do we prepare teachers when they're not actually interacting face-to-face with kids, but then also how do you prepare kids when they are not interacting face-to-face with teachers? So one of the rubs, I think, is for our teacher education program is we're on the peninsula in the Bay Area. And so we don't have a lot of urban schools. Right. So the students don't get a chance to experience urban classrooms and their challenges. We get close, but it's not the same. So one of the faculty is now taking advantage of this so that her students will be able to zoom in on classrooms in Chicago. So they actually get to see sort of what is the character of urban instruction in a few classrooms, something she would have never done before. So I think that's sort of an exciting, interesting experiment.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, and we know that colleges are going through lots of experimentation right now, right? All of a sudden, the University of California says that it's test optional. They're not requiring the SAT or the ACT.
Stop with the test.
Okay, but I'm just saying, no, but I'm going along with the innovation, right? Colleges are trying to figure out, oh, all right, here's another one. Okay. How people who usually could go to check out a college at admit weekend can't go. So all these colleges are doing what they can to virtually try to convince you to come to their university.
We did this. We had virtual admit days, which were very well done. They were really well done. And then we surveyed the students, the potential admits, and 80% still said they prefer to have been here in person.
Interesting.
So we're not there yet. Yeah. So given all these innovations, do you think any of them are going to stick, or do you think it's just going to go back to what it was?
Like, I think that's why we have our special guest on today, Dan.
It is why we have
our
special
guest. I'm going to punt that question.
that was a big punt. Thank you. Larry's going to catch it at the 5-yard line and run it back. So that's fine. So we are very lucky to have one of the wisest people around. This is Larry Cuban. He's a professor emeritus at the School of Education at Stanford. He was a high school social studies teacher, a district superintendent, and a university professor. He's published lots of op-eds, scholarly articles, books on classroom teaching, the history of school reform, which is what we're going to talk about today, and how policy gets translated into practice, and teacher and student use of technologies in K-12 and college, which is what we talked about with Larry back in the good old days before. And Larry has a new book out called Chasing Success and Confronting Failure in American Public Schools. So congratulations, Larry, and welcome.
Yay, Larry. Thank you.
So Larry, schools have been forced into an amazing experiment. Change is usually slow in schools, fits and starts. Do you think this is different? Do you think this is really cataclysmic?
I think it's a calamity. I think it's, yes, it's of that nature, but I always think, trained as a historian, what are the historical analogies that I can come back to that might fit in? One is the Great Depression, because we are going to be entering a Great Recession at the minimum within a few months, if we're not already there. Okay, so the Great Depression, but even before that was the flu, the influenza epidemic of 1918-1919, where schools actually closed down. And then Katrina. The things that happened after them affected schools a great deal. The pandemic of 1918-19 is most similar to what we are experiencing right now. And that was in the middle of the progressive era, when Deweyan ideas and efforts to make schools efficient was rampant. What happened to the schools afterwards? Hardly anything. That progressive ideology was firmly in place in the 1920s. And that was the heyday of progressive education. Now, when you look at Katrina, which is a localized a calamity, everything changed for New Orleans Parish. Everything. All the schools closed. All the teachers were fired. A state sponsored recovery district was formed, and they started all these charter schools. 95% of all kids now go to charter schools.
Larry, all the teachers were fired?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, it was a way of saving money. They were literally, and most of the staff was black, New Orleans Parish. So what happened is you had this dramatic change in governance, in curriculum, with all these charter schools, each one quite different from the other, but they're also similar and similar in many ways. There are only maybe two regular parish schools left that would look quite traditional to us. So when I look at all of these things, and now the COVID, COVID-19, it seems to me that the influenza epidemic of 1918-1919 is more analogous to what we're going to be experiencing, which means that there will be some short-term kinds of incorporation of changes at certain levels. But by and large, schools are not going to change that much. Now, I don't relish being a pessimist when it comes to innovation.
You always are a pessimist.
I was going to say.
I think it's very realistic because I try to stick with the data that I know, and I try to make these comparisons because the reform impulse never stops beating in America.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're speaking with Larry Cuban about what history can tell us. If things are going to stay the same as they were before, go back to the way they were before after this pandemic in schools, or if any lessons will be learned from the pandemic.
This is the pandemic that killed, 20 to 40 million people worldwide? Is that right?
The
1918 flu.
1918 Spanish flu.
Yeah.
It killed more people in the U.S., almost 700,000 people. And that's almost equal to the Civil War a century, 50 years earlier.
Wow. And how long were the schools closed?
The schools, the one that I saw, schools were closed anywhere from 1 to 2 months. There were two cycles of the influenza virus, that particular virus. So it came back and then schools were closed again.
Boy, yeah, that's the fear here, is that we're going to reopen and then have to close again.
You wonder if they were any better at it the second time they closed.
I don't know.
Well, actually, teachers here have been talking about that. And many of them are saying, you know, I was talking with the superintendent yesterday who has 10 different scenarios for re-entry into the fall, right? If little kids only go back, if we go every other day, if we go half day, how do we feed people and socially distance them? So I think that there's more time to plan for the fall, certainly than what we've had for this past time where there was no time at all.
So I'm not sure what going back to what it was before, what that means. So, for example, I've talked to a superintendent who is interested in having 4 days of in-person instruction and 1 day online because he felt there were certain benefits of that.
Right.
To your mind, Larry, is that a change or is that just sort of, no, that's kind of what we do. They've just made it electronic.
I would say that that's an incremental kind of change, but I want to... I think what's going to happen is that there's an immediate kind of period within the next 2 years until everyone's tested and then there's a vaccine, which to me would be a period of 2 to 3 years where everyone gets vaccinated. Then that's the immediate future. And there are going to be a number of different changes on social distancing, on how many kids come to school on a particular day, multiple shift schools. I mean, there are going to be all of those kinds of changes in time and gathering and all of that. I would say that that's almost certain to happen until we get the certainty that usually comes from wholesale vaccination. Then there's what happens after when kids can come together as before. Teachers can do the same as they've done before. And I would say that there would be some modest kinds of changes that would occur. And you mentioned one. For the older kids, there might be an increase on online. We should not separate any changes from the recession that's going to inevitably come. And the reason I raise that is that school budgets have not been doing well, period, prior to COVID-19. And we would have to expect, as what happened in the Great Recession a decade ago, that many teachers will be let go. So we're going to have an economic retrenchment along with these other things. And that's where online instruction for older kids becomes a kind of cost saving. So I would expect that beyond the 2 years because The 2 years that around health and safety issues until vaccination is for all of us is one thing, but that economic pinch is going to occur almost at the same time.
This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We're talking with Larry Cuban about the pinch, the economic pinch, the pinch that all the schools are going to feel for a long time after COVID-19. There may be more layoffs. You know, the first thing that comes to my head with layoffs is that means class sizes are going to get bigger, or they're going to have to do more online with all the pros and cons associated with those things.
Yeah, but remember that online has a lot of holes. You'd have to think of K to 3 or pre-K to 2. And you don't do online. Anyone has tried to Zoom with little kids, with preschoolers, you know, it doesn't occur.
Right.
And what about special ed?
Right.
A lot of the digital inequality has shown up so starkly across the country. So there's a whole bunch of things that have to be built. An infrastructure has to be built, which costs money. But over time, online will become attractive. And will incrementally come in, as Dan was suggesting, I think because it will save money.
So I have a prediction on which things will stick. It's the ones that are simple, easy, cheap. You know, that this was sort of the brilliance of the iPhone. It's just simple to use.
So what's simple, easy, and cheap now that you're seeing online?
I think better connections with the community. I think it's become natural. You see this in medicine where there's telemedicine. People are adopting this as opposed to coming into the hospital. Mm-hmm. Right. So these are simple, they're easy, they're cheap. People just have to get over the barrier of using them. The reason Zoom is so successful is they really set it up to be so simple.
You know what's kind of interesting that happened last week is with parent education, when you try to get parents to come to schools, there's a lot of issues with the commute or traffic or parents who work double shifts or whatever. It's really hard to get parents to come to school events. And there have been school events now that have been getting way more parent attendance because it's online. For those parents who have the ability to go online, and the school said, gosh, maybe all of our parent events should be virtual from here on out. People don't have to commute. People, you know, we'll get more ears and eyes. So that's an interesting thing.
That's very interesting. So we had a faculty meeting, and it was the first faculty meeting that everybody showed up in.
What strikes me listening to the stories that my daughters tell me, my friends and extended family in other parts of the country, what I get from that and then from my knowledge of the past in schools is that schooling, public tax-supported public schooling, will be appreciated far more than it has in the past. It's not only the custodial function, but that is central to what is going on now. And the schools have become a social safety net. I mean, how many schools in urban districts, a lot of districts feed kids. They have provided health services to kids and families. So the schools as a social safety net, I think, will be much more admired. And as anyone who has had to deal with children at home and homeschool, great respect for teachers and teaching will grow from my point of view. And that's a change that I think would be terrific.
You're not such a pessimist, Larry Cuban. This is Schools In with Denise Pope and Dan Schwartz. We will have more with Larry Cuban looking at, from a historian's point of view, what's going to change after COVID-19. We'll have more with Larry next on Sirius XM.
This is Schools In.
I'm not an expert at this. Okay. I'm more expert than you.
When you can't read in American society, you are really left out.
With Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Larry Cuban about some of the things that might stick over time with the changes we're seeing with COVID-19. And one of the things, Larry, you said before the break was, and I'm with you on this, that there might be a newfound respect for teachers and for schools and for all the schools do for the community, which is exciting and gives me a little bit of hope for the future.
But the pessimistic question follow-up is, how long is this going to last? Like 2 years after my kid's out of high school, do I still remember what schools did when I go to the ballot box, when I decide on taxes?
And bonds, you know, school
how
bonds.
How long will the respect stick around?
It's a fair question, and I would be speculating at best, and since I'm retired, it's easy to speculate.
You have permission. You have permission.
I think that COVID-19 has basically marked every generation, every cohort that we have right now. It'll be what happened before COVID and then what happened after COVID. So I think it's that kind of marking event as the influenza epidemic, a pandemic of a century ago, of the Depression, of war. I think it has that kind of stature, that kind of impact. Now, whether that will mean that at the ballot box, well, we'll know something this year about in the presidential election and what happens at the Senate and the House, we'll know something. That's multifaceted, of course, and it's never one factor. But when it comes to voting for bonds for schools or any kind of financial support for schools, I would expect that to occur after the budget retrenchment. I think the budget retrenchment is inevitable. As the economy has shrunk, that ripples through everything. The cities will let go personnel, the government will let, the state and feds will let go of employees. That's just the way it is, because trillions have been going out and the Federal Reserve has been printing all this money. So there has to be an accountability for it. And so there will be a retrenchment.
I think you're right. The people are not going to vote on bonds when they have no money, right? I mean, that's a reality. But how long this lasts, I mean, the last one took, what, a decade, right? More? I don't know.
Well, the recovery began to occur about 3 to 5 years later. Yes. And I would expect something like that again. The economists would know more than I in terms of predictability. But yeah, I would expect that. So there is a short term. Remember, there is the health piece and the wholesale vaccination. Mm. That will quell a lot of the uncertainty and the fears that will not go away until that occurs. And I'm guessing at least 2 years. And the budget retrenchment, all of that is going to be a bad time for schools, from my point of view. They'll soldier through like schools always have. In the Depression, the Great Depression of the 30s, they'll get through. But there will be costs. You mentioned larger classes. There'll be fewer teachers. There'll probably be incrementally more online for older kids. And then when the kids are in school for the first couple years, I mean, you're going to have half shifts, you know, more than one shift of school, kids coming to school during the day, during the week. Yeah.
Is there any evidence what happened to the kids who went through Katrina or the flu pandemic of the 1918, you know, where schooling was quite disrupted? 10 years later, did we suddenly have a decline in intellectual productivity across the nation? Or, you know, is there any way to think about that?
I don't know of any studies after the pandemic of a century ago. I just don't know. But in Katrina, the data is mixed for New Orleans. Charter schools seem to have raised the graduation rates of New Orleans kids. Test scores have risen modestly, but overall, when you look at where kids are performing on Louisiana state tests and so on like that, it's not good nationally. Mm. there have been that kind, those kinds of improvements. But as you mentioned in the break, Dan, there is the issue of summer loss. A number of researchers have documented that. And with schools being closed from mid-March, many of them are not going to open up in June. They say a fall opening, but I, for one, would argue, as some others have argued, that schools ought to open during the summer if it's safer. Who's going to measure all the learning that kids do out of school? A hell of a lot of learning goes on, particularly during this COVID calamity.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Larry Cuban about the residue of all of this on schools and on kids. You mentioned that there is research out there about summer slide. You know, I think a lot of parents are worried about, you know, should my kid retake second grade and should we, you know, how much are they going to miss out? And I love that you just said that learning happens outside of school too. And I think for a lot of parents, it's really reassuring to know your kid is learning how to do chores. Your kid is learning how to be resilient in the time of a pandemic. Your kid is learning a lot of things, not just in the little window that they're on Zoom for the school day. Out of all of this whole show, then, your prediction, what's going to stick?
Again, I think that things that will stick are things that are easy to use, that serve a fairly specific function, right? I think restructuring may stick. I don't know. I don't know that people really want to work from home all the time. And if they don't, then kids can't be at home all the time. And so that's kind of a big unknown for me in this. But I think lots of small innovations, and some of them will be great small innovations. You know, I think YouTube, for example, is one of the most readily adopted pedagogical tools that kind of transforms what you can show in the classroom. You know, now I can show a video of what the solar system looks like when it's rotating, whereas before it was just a picture. And I had to figure all that stuff out.
Final word, Larry.
Okay. The total skill level of educators and non-educators, including students, in terms of technical skills, has risen incrementally from no formal education, just from pragmatic, practical ways of surviving this calamity. The structure of schooling and the infrastructure that exists now will continue. I don't say that's bad or good. I'm just saying that that's what I believe will happen.
Thank you so much, Larry. And thank you for listening, all of you, to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app on iTunes and SoundCloud.
From the campus of Stanford University, this has been Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope on SiriusXM Business Radio. If you missed any of it, listen on demand, online, or with the SiriusXM app.